The Equity and Access Committee meeting for Wednesday, May 17th, from starting at 1 p.m. Winter, roll call, please.
Chair Perkins?
Here.
Vice Chair McMichael?
Here.
Regent Arascata?
There.
Regent Cruz Crawford?
Here.
Regent Goodman? Regent Tarkanian? You do have a quorum.
Thank you so much. Regent Arascata, would you mind leading us in the pledge? Thank you. And with that, I will read. Well, Regent Brown, would you want to read the land acknowledgement? It's in our. No? No? Okay. Okay. Next time. Next time.
I can, Regent Perkin.
Oh, okay. Thank you. Regent Cruz Crawford, go ahead, please.
Before we begin, we'd like to take a moment to recognize here in Nevada, we stand on the land of the Wa-Shishu, Washu, Numu, Northern Paiute, Nui, Western Shoshone, and Nuwu, Southern Paiute. We take a moment to recognize and honor their stewardship that continues into this day. With this recognition, we state an intention to rightfully include their voice and respect them as the 27 sovereign tribal nations of Nevada.
Thank you. And with that, we'll move to public comment. Is there any public comment in Las Vegas?
None in Las Vegas.
Thank you. Is there any public comment in Elko?
There is no public comment in Elko.
Thank you. Is there any public comment in Reno? Start.
Good afternoon. For the record, Dana Trimble, T-R-I-M-B-L-E, IDEA Council Chair and DRI Human Resources Generalist and Diversity Officer. The IDEA Council held its annual retreat in February, and we continue to work on our list of action items. The following are just a few that I would like to highlight. Members of our council reviewed resources available through Vector Training and are developing a configuration guide for the mandatory anti-bias, anti-discrimination training that will be implemented across NCHE in 2024. We also continue to evaluate IDEA-focused best practices in recruitment and retention to ensure our faculty and staff are representative of our students and communities. Members of our council also provided updates and worked with the NCHE System Office to revise the NCHE DACA and Undocumented Students Resource webpage. We are working with Daphne M. Hooper, UNR Director of Indigenous Relations, to determine how we can better serve our Native American students, and we have discussed the benefits of campus security through a DEI lens and are excited to hear more information as part of Chief Garcia and Chief James's presentation today. Additionally, our two subcommittees have been busy. Our Undocumented Student Success Council has been tracking policies across the nation that may filter down to Nevada and provided this update. Florida law SB 1718 has been passed and poses a dangerous threat to college access for undocumented students, among many other human rights violations and safety access restrictions. It's critical to speak out against similar potential policies in our state and across the nation. We encourage you to keep supporting Nevada Bills AB 226 for in-state tuition for DACA recipients, as well as AB 382, which would expand access to free legal immigration services to all college students in Nevada. Also, our HSI task force recently developed a white paper that was shared with the Nevada Congressional Delegation during the Hispanic Association of Colleges and Universities, HACU, the forum in April of 2023. This stressed the importance of increased federal appropriations for HSI grants. I will be providing specific campus updates later in today's meeting, but we appreciate the work of the IDEA Committee and look forward to continuing to work close with all of you. Please feel free to reach out to me if you have questions. Thank you.
Thank you. Any, come on up.
Hello, my name is Gloria. Oh, good. Good. Okay.
My name is Gloria Charlene, Sharleen, mathematician currently providing service in research and administration. My opinion is my own. Through my lifetime, I have taken diversity and inclusion seriously. I'm named after my Spanish grandmother, and my family and friends are very diverse. All my colleagues will tell you that I do not see the color of their skin or the choice in their values. I stand up for everyone who needs help. It's sad to say that I do not feel the same from the university. As we see the universities push the LGBTQ2+ and transgender values, but what about those who value it's not okay fully knowing who you are? What about those who teach our children you will never know who you fully are and you will always change and grow in life? What about those of us who feel that genetically mutilating yourself should never be the answer? What about those of us who think it is cruel and criminal to put a child and young adult on puberty blockers that they will be stuck forever at that age? Why does the Wolf Shop have an LGBTQ section but not a religious section? Where are the UNR email banners with a religious cross? The push is so one-sided that now I am put in a category where I cannot even check the women boxes. It changed to women/trans women. So now I am a prefer not to answer. I do know the difference between XX and XY chromosomes. And if this is not enough, I'm also excluded as a COVID-19 vaccine injured. I was told by the university that my condition is rare when it is not. Thousands across the globe are suffering from vaccine side effects. It breaks my heart when I have students approach me and tell me that they were told it's normal to experience menstrual issues after the vaccine. If this is normal, then why is it not disclosed as a possible side effect? You can read reports on the NIH website as vaccines and sudden infant death, which states, although there is considerable evidence that a subset of infants has increased risk of sudden death after receiving vaccines, health authorities eliminated prophylactic vaccination as the official cause of death. So medical examiners are compelled to misclassify and conceal vaccine-related fatalities under alternate cause of death classifications. Is this also normal? I pray the university can do better. Thank you.
Thank you. Any further public comment here in Reno? And with that, I will move on to the minutes for possible action. There is one correction. It should say February 1st, 2023. The minutes are correct, but the date was a typo. So if I can entertain a motion.
Make the motion with correction.
Do I hear a second? Second. I'm sorry, who was that? Oh, is that Regent Tarkanian? Thank you. Thank you, ma'am. So first, by a motion made by Vice Chair Regent. I just lost it. Hold, I'll start over again. A motion made by Vice Chair Ariscotta, seconded by Regent Tarkanian, with the changes on the acceptance of the minutes. All in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Any opposed?
Aye.
Any opposed? Any abstentions? Thank you. That takes us up to item number 3, the chair's report. First of all, I'd like to thank, to echo what Dana said, that working with the IDEA Council has been incredible, and it's a great group of people who are very focused on the DEI work. And I have additional comments that are in my phone that I am looking up right now. Okay. I would like to bring to the attention of my colleagues and constituencies the abuse of power being perpetrated by legal under the current board leadership. Rather than aligning our code, processes, and policies with the Equal Rights Amendment in the Nevada Constitution that was recently adopted, protecting freedom of speech and encouraging the spirit of debate amongst this group of elected leaders, it is being used like some bizarre form of Jim Crow to silence the injustices that are currently in some of our policies and procedures. Instead of encouraging positive dialogue that would provide accessibility, equality, diversity, and inclusion, the committee that we're now sitting in to do just that is bullied, coerced about every agenda. I feel it is my duty as a duly elected, and I can be silent no longer. I hope this statement will shed some light on the situation. I was hoping that this might change with the newer, more allegedly enlightened leadership. I am disappointed to say that it has not. It seems that, like those who benefit materially, politically, and financially from things remaining the same, those who are steeped in privilege have no desire to support the efforts of others to right the scales, nor use their ability to be allies in this work. And to live up to the resolutions that were recently adopted by this board in the equality statement. This goes against the very grain of academia, to educate, expose, improve, grow, and expose the minds. This not only does a disservice to our students, but to our faculty, our staff, and our peers, and our community. The measure of humanity is not how we treat those who reflect us, but how we treat those with whom we have to struggle to find commonalities. You don't have to always agree. However, it is incumbent on the emotionally intelligent individual to listen and come alongside those who have experienced an injustice without justifying, defending, deflecting, stifling, ignoring, sabotaging, criticizing, misleading, dismissing, or undermining. To knowingly continue this type of behavior that does not hold others to a higher, more inclusive standard is a travesty and grossly negligent. It should not be tolerated. In fact, it should be discouraged at every turn, every time, by everyone until there's no more complacency. And with that, I will turn it over to Tyler Perry, who's in our office, who will give us a brief, what was the name of it again? It was a brief... A brief educational piece called Diversity Digest. There he is, Dr. Perry.
Dr. Tyler's fine, too. Thank you very much for having me this afternoon. Been asked to speak on the subject of privilege, which from an academic perspective is a broad categorical term that lends itself to various intersecting components. On the surface, privilege is relatively easy to understand as it simply connotes that one holds certain advantages over another. Economic and wealth privilege is a significant component of social inequality in modern society, and the wealth gap between the rich and the poor continues to expand across the United States. The vast majority of class-based studies note the difficulties in overcoming wealth inequality, as poor and working people assume crippling debt for increasingly expensive higher education degrees. Certain groups are disenfranchised from home ownership. They are unable to pay for certifications to advance in their career, and there remain significant divides across communities in the transfer of intergenerational wealth. This exemplifies a divide between the privileged and the unprivileged. Indeed, the concept of privilege can be transferred into various societal contexts, including unequal treatment in the eyes of the law, or how one's gender, region, and/or nationality impacts preconceived judgments leveled against them. Privilege exists in various avenues of life and is one's awareness of their privilege that becomes the most important component for anyone who wonders how it impacts their life. Everyone has some form of privilege, but not all privileges are the same. And this brings me to the primary subject that I think is one of the more misunderstood aspects of privilege in the areas I research. When one mentions white privilege, it connotes a variety of reactions, oftentimes, but not entirely, based upon one's socio-political leanings. For many on the more conservative right, it is said to be a scare tactic developed by neo-Marxists to induce white guilt amongst Euro-American populations and degrade and dehumanize their existence. This specter of white privilege is used by right-wing politicians to discredit academic work in the fields of race or ethnic studies, gender and sexuality studies, and other disciplines centered around activism and social justice. I believe in the state of Florida, what I'm doing right now would probably be considered illegal. For some on the more progressive left, it is at times generalized as a golden ticket for people categorized as white to assert themselves into the highest echelons of society with relative ease. This leads some people to believe that people categorized as white never suffer or struggle due to privileges given for whiteness as a birthright. Whiteness does equate to greater access to social capital, but examples do need further nuance. For instance, I'm currently writing a book about the history of community activism against the Las Vegas police. The coroner's reports reveal many white people were and are brutalized, harassed, and killed by law enforcement. Around 30 million white people are in poverty within the United States, and a large percentage of the homeless population is categorized as white. Now, these are arguments that one hears from political conservatives who scoff at the concept of white privilege by noting that many white people in this country do not have it easy, and many struggle their entire life for their earnings. But such assertions also show how such critiques have an incomplete understanding of what is meant by the term, and so what does it mean? I should first note that white privilege remains an important concept to discuss in modern society, as its power is still very, very real. We should first understand that the construction of whiteness in the United States guarantees that your identity as a white person does not negatively mark you within broader society or hold you back from pursuing your interests. Whiteness is equated with Americanness. Whiteness ensures a sense of belonging in the United States. A long, long list of political leaders are white, and white people are guaranteed representation in all facets of society without question. Constructions of blackness, however, were intended to manifest white supremacy and ensure people of African descent were not only enslaved over generations, but held tenuous and questionable citizenship within the country even after freedom, as revealed through the postbellum rise of Jim Crow or the recent eras of the war on crime and the drug war. Since the country's foundation, black Americans were perceived as a threat to white nationhood, and they have seen their rights stripped from them at each turn of American history, particularly as backlash for any advancements they attain. In contrast, white people have never felt systemic exclusion, racism, or brutality for being classified as white. Ethnic groups like the Italians and Irish faced significant mistreatment in their early generations of migration, but once they were absorbed into whiteness, they obtained the privileges that came with the identity. It is true that white privilege is not a guarantee to social or economic advancement. Bad things can and do happen to white people, but the concept of white privilege teaches us that these terrible things do not happen to white people because they are white. When we place privilege within a historical context, we better understand how inequitable ideas were baked into the system, and the consequences of such ideas continue to percolate throughout the modern era. The foundations of settler colonialism and chattel slavery ensured legacies of inequality positioned one race with significant advantages over others, be it expressed through the racial wealth gap, political disenfranchisement, attacks upon the teaching of racism in American history, or the disproportionate abuses initiated by the carceral state against marginalized communities. In our present day, I'd argue that coalition building for a better future is predicated upon the mutual understanding of privilege as a social construct and social reality, and an honest reckoning with the concept's continued power in public life helps overturn misunderstandings and produce a unified front for true social change. Thank you for your time.
Thank you. Are there any questions about the chair's report? Thank you so much, Dr. Tyler.
I have a question. I have a question.
I can't see.
It's Stephanie Goodman.
Oh, hey, Stephanie. I'm sorry, Regent Goodman.
How is that a chair's report, Regent Perkins?
I can use my chair's report to establish or teach in a short manner of time. It's my report, and he is part of my report.
Okay.
It's part of this committee. Thanks for asking. Okay, next we'll move on to the University Police Services Community Engagement and Outreach for information only. I don't know who's going first. Is it? Okay.
Good afternoon.
Stop. Oh, okay.
Good afternoon, Chair Perkins, Vice Chair McMichael, and committee members. Can you hear me okay?
Yes.
Yes, sir.
Thank you. For the record, my name is Adam Garcia, Vice President, Public Safety Services, and Director of University Police Southern Command. I'll be providing you with an update on the status of Southern Command's community engagement, outreach, and other activities, as well as other initiatives that increases law enforcement awareness and visibility throughout our campuses. In your packet, you'll find the bylaws for Southern Command's Public Safety Advisory Board, which was established in 2021. The board and UPD are fortunate to have Nevada State College Director for Cultural Planning and Policy, Amy Evaluna, as its chair. Amy has kept the board on task, and she's ensured that the board meets quarterly and has met since its inception, with the latest meeting held last week on Thursday, May 11th. At that meeting, the board was provided with department updates. We discussed community engagement projects. The board was given legislative updates pertaining to issues related to UPD and law enforcement. We discussed safety at the UNLV residence halls, presented sex trafficking resources, and discussed medical district pedestrian safety updates. I should note that these weren't just discussion points. We established a task force to address residential life safety issues using the UPD 2019 Residential Life Safety Report and have scheduled an initial meeting for June 7th. The discussion regarding sex trafficking resources resulted and a push to provide information to all of our campus communities and inclusion of a link to resources on the UPD website. The membership of the board includes a broad section of students, faculty, and staff from all four institutions. And the board's charge is fostering a relationship between the campuses and UPD, provide an inclusive environment for our campuses, make recommendations to UPD, promote and support public awareness programs. In addition to meeting on a regular basis, the board has continually attended department and community functions. Our department recruitment continues to build a diverse team that's representative of the communities that we serve. Our department has the highest female representation than the national average, including its first assistant director, who's here today. Female representation currently within the department is 17% of our sworn staff. I have signed and committed our recruiting resources to the 30 by 30 pledge that you see on the screen now. The department agrees by signing this agreement to develop and implement strategies and solutions to advance women in policing and to improve the representation and experiences of women in law enforcement. In addition, by signing the pledge, I agreed to take measures to increase the representation of women in all ranks of law enforcement, to ensure that policies and procedures are free of all bias, to promote equitable hiring, retention, and promotion of women officers, and to ensure their culture is inclusive, respectful, and supportive of all women of all ranks and roles within our department. Finally, the department will have 30% of our sworn staff females by 2030, thus the 30 by 30 project. As we continue to build a representative agency, literally and figuratively, I took the additional step in 2022 of remodeling the female locker room to bring the number of female lockers available for our team from 11 to 25. The department continues to provide a plethora of training across Southern Command through our outreach. You can see on the screen a fraction of what we're doing. In addition to what you see here, Lieutenant Roy Alexander will serve as the representative of the department on the Las Vegas Super Bowl Public Safety and Security Committee for the host committee for Super Bowl 58. The department will host national training for the Cleary Center at UNLV October 24th through October 26th. And the department will host the National Safety Conference to be held July 10th and 12th at the M Resort in Las Vegas. And I have been invited to give the welcome address to the attendees. There are currently two events that are in the works that I wanted to briefly discuss. The first is a police day to be held at each of the institutions that we serve, to include water balloon tosses, tug of war, a dunking machine, and other competitive events between members of university police and our students, faculty, and staff. It's intended that we will hold these police days in the fall, beginning of the new semester. The other event is meant as a bonding event between members of the department in our efforts to show appreciation to our team and to continue to address the issues of mental well-being for our campus first responders. Finally, I wanted to inform the committee that I have been elected as a member of the board of directors to the Nevada Police Foundation. The foundation includes the Nevada State Police, University Police, Park Rangers, Capitol Police, the Department of Agriculture, Parole and Probation, the Fire Marshal Division, and other state law enforcement agencies. And the intent of the foundation is to provide support, resources, and financial assistance to statewide law enforcement agencies and their families. And the foundation is active in community outreach. I would invite members of the committee, the Board of Regents, and our NSHE family to join me for the 23rd annual golf tournament to be held Friday, August 18th at the Red Hawk Golf Course and Resort in Sparks. Madam Chair, that concludes my report. I'll be available for any questions if anybody has.
Thank you so much, Chief. Any questions? So are we invited to hear you speak at the opening of at the MGM?
I'm sorry?
Are we invited to hear you speak, do that opening?
Adam Garcia, for the record, absolutely. I can send an invite through the Chancellor's office and carry to the board if you'd like to attend.
Thank you so much. Any other questions for Chief Garcia?
Madam Chair?
I believe that's Regent Boylan.
Yes, ma'am. I am not on the committee, but I take affront to what the chief said. There was a donut with dogs. I wasn't invited to that. Balloon throws and things like that. And that really breaks my heart. So next time that happens, I recommend that the chief informs the board. And if no one else goes, Chief, I'll bring some donuts for them.
Thank you.
That's all, ma'am. Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you, Regent Boylan, for that comment. Any other comments? Thank you. And now we're going to hear from Chief James. Thank you.
Two more board members. Eric James, for the record, Chief of Police, Northern Nevada Command. Today we're going to give our side of it, just much as my colleague did down south. And so I have to do the next slide, please. So I'm sorry, I apologize. So next, thank you. So we had our advisory board. my predecessor, we had it going And then through COVID, it took a backseat because of what COVID happened. So right now we had an organizational change we established due to the expired terms. And so what we did was we actually took a step back and we did things a little bit differently. We serve five very specific presidents in Northern Nevada. And we felt that one committee to represent all of those is probably not the best thing to do for the mere fact that what needs are for TMCC are not the same needs for the Great Basin College and Elko all the way down to WNC. And so what we did was we reestablished it at the University of Nevada, Reno to get it started. And that is a representation of the group with board members consisting of students, faculty, staff, and community partners. And today I actually have our chair here, Dr. Carrie Hintz. If you have any questions about the board, I'm sure she'd be more than happy to come up and talk about it. But that was us getting back on track. And so I think it fits what we're doing is a better model for us. I'm not saying it's better or worse, but for us, it's better because of the area that we serve. And again, we serve five different institutions. We think every institution deserves to have their voice heard in the matter in which that they are wish to be represented. So next slide, please. Oh, there it is. So we broke ours up slightly differently to just talk about some of the programs that we've done from March 22 all the way through 23, October 22 through March 23. And so our first slide here is our women's self-defense. So we had a girls on guard instructor workshop here in Reno, Nevada, up at Truckee Meadows Community College. We had a great attendance to include Southern Command, sent some individuals up as well. And we've done self-defense presentations through criminal justice classes, the health center, the Latino student board self-defense event. That was a great event for our Latino students. And then our resident life self-defense class, along with TMCC Counseling Center for self-defense classes as well. And then a self-defense class workshop at a local museum event. It was a well-attended event down at the Children's Museum. It's actually really a neat event for about a four-hour event where everyone kind of came up and got an opportunity to go through some of our self-defense things. It was really neat. Next slide, please. So we talk about our campus resource initiatives. I think before I continue, I have a theory in a lot of things in life, and one of them is you can't make friends in a day. You have to do it daily. And so the things that we do every single day as a department are intertwined as part of our culture, and it's also part of our outreach with everyone. We don't do things in a day. So one event doesn't do something that a bunch of events every single day need to do. So we had a winter orientation resource fair tabling. Our outreach individual, Madison Effort, does outreach every single week. She is absolutely phenomenal. And yesterday was her one-year anniversary with the department. And I'm super proud of her because she has done what she understands what the community wants, what they need, and she is just so great at organizing with our partners. We had a Valentine's Day healthy relationship tabling where they actually made condom roses and they passed them out. We had a domestic violence awareness month. We did a UMPD blue light class. We had International Women's Fair Day. We had Parent Weekend Resource Roundup. And then we had a dining resources fair tabling. Again, just a very small part of what we do as part of our tabling outreach. Next slide, please. Our community events. Coffee with a Cop held at every single one of our institutions. Great Basin is not up there. That should be on there. But UNR, WNC, and TMCC. Pizza with the Police. And what's so nice about our events is it's not just us doing it. So our Pizza with the Police down at WNC, the Sheriff's Department shows up. They bring their canines out. It's really a cool event. Alcohol awareness down at WNC and at UNR. Blood drive events, smoke-free campus events, alcohol awareness events, Denim Drive, Consent Carnival / Sexual Assault Awareness events, and then Sex Trafficking Awareness Fair. And I do want to mention something that Adam had said also. Is part of that sex trafficking, we have a member on the HEAT team here in Northern Nevada, the Human Exploitation Team, and they have been instrumental. In fact, just yesterday I was at a meeting and the FBI commended Detective Seifert for her amazing work to help find a suspect in Stockton and get him back to here to be arrested. And so I think the work that she does with the FBI, with all of our local law enforcement agencies is absolutely amazing, and it really does make an impact to our campus. Next slide, please. So here's our Dogs Donate Life Oregon. We had one at WNC, TMCC, and UNR. And while everyone got an award for excellence of participation, I think that was great, We actually received the award for the most new registered donors as an individual agency in the state of Nevada. And so, again, that goes to Lauren Reed and Madison Effort. When they do their work, they're phenomenal at what they do. And we got a special award for that. And I didn't know it was going to happen, and they got it, and I thought that was pretty amazing. Fabulous event, well attended by not only us, but also Reno, Sparks, Washoe County, Highway Patrol. We even had a fire service dog there. We'll let the fire department come play sometimes. So the fire department showed up with their dog as well. And so just a great event, though, because it's such an important thing to be able to help someone after you pass to donate those organs or those tissues. It's such an important thing. And I really, really commend their efforts, not only them, but also the organization for the amazing work that they do. Next slide, please. So our campus and community partnerships. So we have the Office of International Student Presentation Orientation. We present to every one of these. I was actually a moderator for the 2023 Northern Nevada Diversity Summit with Dr. Moore, is going to be covering a little bit later. Campus-wide active assailant response training. We have seen an overwhelming, especially after a few incidents as we've had around the nation, we've seen an overwhelming request for these, and we're doing upwards of 5 to 10 a week now, and it's almost to the point of trying to keep up to these, but not just for the university, not just for all of our other institutions, also with our community members as well. We had someone step out today and went out to the Reno Housing Authority and do a presentation for them as well. And so we're really trying to make sure that we're spreading the message of safety and workplace violence and active assailant. University Health Center station tour. They were fabulous. They come down, they take some tours, but also they brought us donuts yesterday. So I know I appreciated that. They hide the donuts from me, though, just to be honest. Our monthly PAC provision tabling. PAC provision is a great program through the university where they are able to help out those students who are in need of certain things. And we help not only table, but also some of our officers and myself, we donate to the monthly cause as well. Carson City's Sheriff's Office K-9 Invitational, big event, lots of dogs. We got invited. We went down there for that. We took two of our dogs down there as well. Special Olympics, the Big Brothers, Big Sisters of Northern Nevada, our Bigs with Badges partnership. So this is an officer who the individual who we partner with knows they're an officer, and they show up in uniform, out of uniform, but they're able to take. One of the things that we talk a lot about is like how can peace officers help? And unless we can get into the home, we can't help as much as we want to. This is an opportunity for us to start. And the amazing work that Big Brothers and Big Sisters does in Northern Nevada is absolutely incredible. They asked me to be a board member, so I'm a board member with them now. And it's just absolutely phenomenal. They do so many great things. The WNC New Instructor Onboarding Video Project, that's with some of our crew down at WNC has been helping with that. Res Life and UPD Meet and Greet Event. We do this every single semester because there's always turnover, whether it's with our department or over at Residential Life. So we actually meet with them and say, "Hi, I'm Eric. I work graveyard. I'll be the one responding over to you when you need assistance at 2 a.m. So it's an opportunity to meet and then work together before we're called to help them out. And then also the Bohatch Elementary School First Responder Event. Some of you may or may not know, Bohatch was killed years ago. They named an elementary school after him, and every year they do a first responder event in memorial of that. And one of our pictures up there is with Deputy Chief Reynolds and his daughter. It's a great event, but it also really, I think, sets the heart for the officers to know that he's still remembered even after all these years. So next slide, please. And then our ongoing programs. So our women's self-defense classes, we do weekly drop-in. We're Girls on Guard over in the Wiegand Fitness Center. We also do a rape aggression defense class. It's a PEX-199. It's a one-credit class. It's 12 weeks. Our deputy chief teaches that. Our deputy chief is going to be going to the FBI Academy, so someone else is going to have to teach that, and also super, super proud of him. University Police Department training presentations, Stop the Bleed. One of the things we always talk about during active assailant is if you are injured. So what we've done is we've actually now started to teach that, okay, now you're injured. How do we stop the bleeding? And it's part of actually in 2008, President Obama kind of started rolling this out, and we've kept it going, and it's a great it helps marry some of the other stuff that we do to include our active assailant training, but then also our amazing emergency management team with Dr. Wins and her team. She and her team have been teaching the first 30 seconds, prepared, not scared. And it's a great presentation. It really gets people to think about what's going to happen and then to prepare for it, not to be scared of it. And she actually just told me that FEMA's new guidelines are right starting to actually come to what today's world should be. of FEMA knowing your constituents, knowing your people, knowing your community, knowing everything about them. And so I'm glad to see that she's already been doing that to include the department. So they are just phenomenal. We also are doing the 30 by 30 initiative. And I know that Adam already talked about that. So there's no need for getting that. We're also doing the police to peace. And so what we're doing is we're saying, we are police officers, but we're peace officers first. And that's also under the Nevada Revised Statute. And so we're working through to see what the community looks like as far as police versus peace. And then some of us have even started to wear on our vests peace officer instead of police officer, because that's what we are. And then lastly is the What's My Name campaign, the Stop, Ask, Match, and Inform. It's a SAMI project to help individuals when they're getting into their ride shares to make sure that they're getting into the right car with the right person at the right time at the right location. Again, just another thing that Madison has done at all our institutions, which I think is just nothing but helped our community tenfold. So next slide, please. I think that was it.
Thank you so much, Chief. Any questions?
This is Regent McMichael.
Go ahead, Regent McMichael, or Vice Chair McMichael.
I'd just like to make a comment and commend both Chief Garcia and Chief James for their community outreach. I think it's a wonderful thing that they're doing. And I just wish that everyone just keep in mind that these events that take place amongst the community and police help strengthen our resolve to make sure that everyone is taken care of properly. Thank you.
Thank you for that comment. Any other comments? Regent Brown.
Regent Brown, for the record, I also want to just echo my colleague's comments. I think the report from the South and the Northern Command show that there is a student first initiative to want to be a friend and not just a presence on campus. And I think that given all the media, given all the things happening in this world, I think it's really important that we've taken that approach. So I just want to thank both you and Mr. Garcia for that.
Thank you for that comment. Any further comments? Thank you, Chief. Good job. And now for the report on the Northern...
Madam Chair?
Yes.
I'm sorry. This is Regent Carvalho. I just had one question, if you'd allow.
Oh, go ahead, Regent Carvalho. Go ahead, Regent Carvalho.
Thank you. I appreciate it. I want to echo what Vice Chair McMichael and Regent Brown said. I think that what the Southern and Northern Command are doing is excellent. Community policing is definitely the way to go. I did have a question regarding that. At one time, I know that the Northern Command was partnering with the Department of Social Work at UNR, and I thought that the Southern Command was going to be working on something similar where students went out with our officers in an outreach effort to assist on calls. And I was wondering if that is still happening or if there is an effort underway to do something similar to that. Thank you.
Eric James, for the record. Yes, we still do that. Now that the end of the year is over, everyone's graduating, probably in the next 4 to 6 weeks, we will start getting applications and start meeting with those individuals to see if this is someplace they want to work as part of that internship. And then absolutely, they come in, they ride with the officers, and they go out and handle some of the issues that we have, especially with those experiencing homelessness or things of that issue. We just had one yesterday that would have been a great call for them. So, yes, absolutely, it's still going on.
Thank you. Did that answer your question, Regent Carvalho?
Yes, I appreciate it. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Chief. And the report for the Northern Nevada Diversity Summit presented by Dr. Angela Moore.
Awesome. Thank you so much for having me here today, all. Could we get the PowerPoint turned on? I'm Dr. Angela Moore. I use she, her, Aya pronouns. I'm the Program Development Specialist for Diversity and Inclusion at the University of Nevada, Reno. There goes. And I'm here to give an update on the 2023 Northern Nevada Diversity Summit, which was our first time back in person after the pandemic or following the height of the pandemic. Next slide, please. So the theme for the Northern Nevada Diversity Summit this year was Understanding and Supporting Experiences of Belonging, which was discussed and voted on by the Cultural Diversity Committee. It was held on Friday, April 14th from 8 a.m. to 5 p.m. at the University of Nevada, Reno's Joe Crowley Student Union. We had some virtual engagement options available and use northnvdiversity.org as our online home portal. Next slide, please. Want to thank all of our sponsoring partners, ASUN, DRI, GBC, TMCC, UNR, and WNC for all of their contributions and sponsorships. Next slide, please. So our conference session overview, we had 25 different concurrent presentations. 15 of those were 1 hour, 10 were half hour. 6 of them were hybrid accessible. We had one keynote that was also hybrid accessible, one poster and networking session with 8 posters displayed, and 9 different topic tables for networking for folks to mingle and chat with each other. Next slide, please. Our keynote was Brandon Wolf this year, who is a Pulse Nightclub survivor, press secretary for Equality Florida, LGBTQ plus civil rights activist, co-founder of the Drew Project, and author of A Place for Us. We had 285 registered to attend, and some comments on the keynote were that Brandon was wonderful, thank you for bringing him here, and it was so special, hard to explain, and something I want to wash over me. Next slide, please. We had a total of 444 registered, 211 checked in person, 157 attended over Zoom. We had 85 different presenters. 54% were first-time attendees that had registered at least. 46% were returning. Of those who registered, 40% planned to attend in person, 27 planned virtually, 33 planned hybrid. And then there's a breakdown of the attendees over there on the side. So about 9% were undergraduate students, 9% graduate students, 12% educators, 22% administrators, 25% staff, 2% community education partners, 3% community advocacy partners, 5% researchers, 12% other, and 1% preferred not to answer. Next slide, please. We had 38 total evaluations, the most reviewed sessions, and we'll go through the top 3. The first was Applied Workshop in Building Inclusive Spaces. We have all of our presenters listed there. Some of the comments were great energy in the room, lots of good interactions and activities, and very knowledgeable and engaging. Next slide, please. Insights from DRI's Inclusion and Belonging Survey, our process rationale and 2 years of learning, and our presenters listed there. Some comments are really appreciated the description of the process and examples used to demonstrate how a survey of belonging was implemented. Next slide, please. Fostering equity and inclusion at the Child and Family Research Center, presenters. And then of the comments there, we thought what summarized a lot of those was just thank you and lots of gratitude there. Next slide, please. Some positive themes from the evaluations were that the sessions provided valuable insights, presenters were skilled in engaging, insightful data, stories, and resources, group discussions during sessions were helpful, and folks liked the keynote. Next slide, please. Improvement themes were more schedule and location signage, more time in sessions, more multilingual sessions and posters, more participant discussion time in the sessions, and some more explanation of our table topic session itself. Next slide, please. Final notes, our northnevadadiversity.org had over 1,300 unique visitors over the time of our summit. Organizers, volunteers, and presenters all received a certificate of special congressional commendation from Senator Jackie Rosen. So thank you to Senator Rosen and her office. And then congratulations to our Northern Nevada Diversity Summit student speech contest winners, Caitlin Shamia, Gregory Hillman, and Monica Barty. And then next slide, please. Final note. Thank you to everyone who made this possible. We really appreciate your collaboration, and thank you for inviting me here for this report.
Thank you. Thank you very much for that presentation, and thank you for taking it on and making it so successful. I really appreciate that. Any other questions or comments?
Chair Perkins, this is Regent Del Carlo. Can I say something?
Go ahead, Regent. Go ahead, Regent Del Carlo.
Thank you very much, Chair. And I was at the Diversity Summit, and I thought it was really good this year. And I think I did fill out my evaluation. I thought your speaker was tremendous. I mean, it really taught me a lot. I have to say it was really good. But I want to say that it was really nice that instead of just having lectures, this was really interactive. And I liked that because sometimes it's hard to stay engaged from 8 to 5, but this was very interactive. And I think you get a lot out of that. So you guys did a great job. Thank you.
Thank you.
Any further comments? I have a quick question. Regent Brown, go ahead.
Thank you for your presentation. I'm sorry I missed attending. That actually is why I'm asking. Is this a one-off initiative or is this a will we see this again? Will we build upon it? Will it get bigger? Will there be one in the South? Like what's the trajectory for this? And I apologize if you're not the right person for me to ask, but I did want to just get a little more context.
Yeah, that's a great question. I think there might be some more folks here who might have more context also to give, but we do this annually. So there's every year a Northern Nevada Diversity Summit and then also a Southern Nevada Diversity Summit. And so the Southern Nevada Diversity Summit is a collaborative effort between the Southern Inshi institutions and then the North with the Northern Inshi institutions. So that happens every fall and then this one is every spring. Yeah, thank you.
So does that technically, and this is maybe a question for you, Chair, is this something that's organized through this committee, or is it a separate committee that reports to here? I'm just trying to get an understanding of how it works with the higher ed institution.
Awesome. Well, it's not from this committee. It's from the IDEA Council who initiates it, and then they recruit people from different institutions to master it and to organize it. Does that?
Well, then I just want to say thank you to that council now that I can direct my questions and my thank to the right places, because I do know it is no small feat to take on something like this, but it is important. And just like I said, with our Northern and Southern Command, it is important to have these conversations out front. So just thank you to that committee up in the North and in the South for putting these on.
Ditto. Thank you. Thank you very much. And now we're moving on to item number 6, Inshi Equity in Hiring and Retention Blind Hiring Pilot. Do I want to start with acting Chair Urquiaga?
Thank you, Madam Chair. For the record, I'm Dale Urquiaga, Acting Chancellor, and I apologize to the Chair and the committee for me racing in late. I was coming from Carson City trying to be sure we had enough money to continue this good work, so I apologize. The committee will recall that at your February meeting, you essentially directed staff to move forward with a blind hiring pilot, and that was approved by the board in the committee report that was transmitted to the board at the board's full March meeting. And we are fortunate, I think there are folks are in Las Vegas from UNLV. As I think I have mentioned to this body before, our colleagues at UNLV stepped forward very quickly. Saval down there and her folks, and I think they have identified a department or an office within the institution. And so I'm probably going to defer some time to Mr. Williams and to the UNLV team if they're there. So the way this will work, we'll begin a pilot project at least at that institution. If others step forward, that'll allow us to sort of collect the data. What kinds of numbers are we talking about? There's a back-end question about whether or not this will be automated through Workday, which is the system we use for hiring, or if it'll be a paper process. So I think the pilot will help us with that. Our goal is to be able to run through a pilot so that then we can come back and say to the board and to the institutions, here are the good parts, here are the bad parts, here are the things that need to be worked out, here's where we need money, here's what implementation would look like as we go further into the next academic and fiscal year. So I've probably exhausted my usefulness in this conversation, Madam Chair, and I'm going to see if Mr. Williams and our colleagues from UNLV would like to correct anything I just said or add.
Thank you, sir. And Mr. Williams, I think I saw you had the whole room to yourself there.
Thank you, Madam Chair. For the record, Tillery Williams, Director of Community Engagement, Equity, and Inclusion for the System Office. I just would like to say that Acting Chancellor Urquiaga gave a very good update. I would add that as part of these efforts, we have been, as far when I say we staff, and I believe Regent Perkins, you were part of one of these conversations with UNLV about kind of where they are in their process and what they would need from NSHE to kind of move along with implementing that pilot. And those conversations are ongoing. Staff has also reached back out to SHRM, and it's the Society for Human Resource Management, to pretty much ask for some more assistance in how we can better understand the low-hanging fruit and things that are pretty much straightforward with implementation and some of the more complicated things that we would have to consider as a system to implement this if we were to do it system-wide. And so some of those things talk about what is needed from an HR component, you know, because we do have our workday system. Another component that they actually presented in the white paper that staff is still kind of digesting and figuring out, you know, how we present that information is just thinking about the information you would like to redact as a board once we start talking about the information that we know as far as names and institutions or what have you that have been used in previous searches or around the country in general to bring some type of bias to the recruitment process. So that's kind of where we are with everything. And we do have UNLV on the call if they would like to add anything else. But, Madam Chair, that marks the end of my remarks.
Thank you. Before we go to the UNLV, you mentioned what needs to be redacted. Is that included in that SHRM report?
Yes, they do. They do cover some of the things that generally, historically, as part of these types of processes, some of the information that the actual HR field as a whole has looked at to redact. And so, yes, that is covered.
Thank you so much. Now I'll move on to UNLV if anybody is on. Does that mean that they are not present?
I do see Saval's assistant on, but I'm not sure. I don't see Saval from my end.
We'll keep that open then and come back and discuss it at a later date. I think we'll have meetings in between also to with UNLV and all the invested parties so that we can start moving forward.
Madam Chair.
Go ahead.
For the record, Madam Chair, Dale Urquiaga, I just wanted to put a pin in it and say thank you for keeping us moving on this with my schedule at the legislature. And as you know, Mr. Williams is my fiscal note person in addition to his job in community engagement and diversity. So we're very fortunate that UNLV has been working with us. So one of the things that I have learned in the time that I've been in this job is the complexity of our very decentralized system. And so as we work with UNLV and with you in the interim, as we bring updates to this committee, and since I'm leaving, I need to say this out loud. I would also encourage the team to take this information to the Human Resources Advisory Council or Committee. I don't remember which their names are. They've been very helpful to me in a recent review of the remote work policy, as well as some additional information that I was collecting on benefits for the legislature. So because our institutions are so different from each other, as we work through a pilot, if I'm not here, don't forget to go to maybe run some of this through the council as well. And I know that Mr. Williams will remember that. Thank you, Madam Chair.
That's an excellent suggestion. We will definitely do that. Definitely. Any other questions from the committee or from any regents that are present? Well, thank you. Thank you for that report, and thank you, Acting Chancellor. Got it right that time. And the IDEA Council Campus Activity Update.
Thank you. For the record, Dana Trimble, IDEA Council Chair and DRI Human Resources Generalist and Diversity Officer. Thank you for the opportunity to present updates on the IDEA-focused activities occurring on our ANSHE campuses. As a reminder, we are a majority-minority system serving more than 105,000 students in 2021. Of those students, 31.6% identify as Hispanic, 7.1% is Black or African American, 10.5% is Asian, and 8% is two or more races. 5 out of our 7 institutions are Hispanic-serving institutions, and 3 are also minority-serving institutions. Nevada now has the 3 Title V grants, which is the U.S. Department of Education's Developing Hispanic-Serving Institutions program, including 2 at NSC and 1 at CSN. What does all this mean? It means we are a very diverse system, and this underlines the importance of this council's work. While the IDEA Council is often focused on system-wide IDEA initiatives, our diversity officers have their boots on the ground doing the hard day-to-day work to continuously help improve the lives of our students, faculty, and staff. We wanted to highlight just a few of the recent successes happening on our campuses provided by some of our council members. Rocky Meadows Community College, TMCC, hosted their inaugural Unity graduation celebration this semester. This celebration and ceremony recognized the academic achievements of historically underrepresented students through a celebration with graduates and their support systems, faculty and staff, students and community members. Students who participated received a medallion that was able to be worn at the TMCC commencement. Thanks to a wonderful Nevada Health Equity Grant, TMCC has been facilitating LGBTQIA+ educational workshops for the Northern Nevada nonprofits and institutions. TMCC's Fostering College Success Program is also in full swing, recently hosting their in-person Foster Youth Summit for students, potential students, and community partners. Great Basin. On April 29th, Great Basin hosted the Arts and Healing Project. This was a family-friendly mental illness awareness project which featured Shoshone drumming with Jeremiah Jones. On May 3rd, GBC hosted the LGBTQIA+ training from TMCC to faculty and staff. This is conducted by Kyle Weiss at TMCC. And I want to personally note that the feedback on this training has been outstanding. College of Southern Nevada. This spring, CSN hosted the American Association for Hispanics in Higher Education Conference, which many of our faculty, staff, and administrators from across our system were able to attend. The Southern Nevada Diversity Summit, the Dr. Moore covered, this is the Southern one versus the Northern one. The Southern Nevada Diversity Summit will take place at CSN on October 6th. So Regent Brown, that answers your question. That's the October 6th. I'm actually, since DRI has campuses in both Reno and Vegas, I'm on both committees. So I get to see both, which is great. So the IDEA Council's HSI Task Force is contributing content to this event, as it has been a goal of the task force to provide professional development for the NSHE system related to HSI best practices. Please mark your calendars and join us for the summit, again, October 6th. CSN now has their first ever undocumented student resource coordinator, Christina De La Torre. Christina joins UNR, UNLV, and NSC in institutionalizing a coordinator role designated for undocumented student support. The ANSHE Undocumented Student Success Council is excited to welcome Christina. UNR. This fall marked 2 years since UNR began requiring implicit bias training online in Canvas for individuals serving on search committees, and the first year that the 2-year follow-up requirement was implemented. UNR also debuted a 4-part DEI workshop series titled Foundations for Advancing Belonging and developed recommendations for creating a welcoming and inclusive syllabus. UNR students, faculty, and staff hosted many new and returning diverse cultural celebrations and events, such as the first menorah lighting celebration, a new hip-hop scholar speaker series, a Lunar New Year celebration, the Northern Nevada Diversity Summit, the popular Tu Bienvenida event, a returning gender-affirming closet pop-up, and affinity graduation celebrations. UNR is also in the process of rehiring an executive director of diversity, equity, and inclusion, a Title IX director, and a multicultural center director. UNR has hired a director of Latinx community relations and a director of indigenous community relations, both new positions, and is organizing a Native indigenous faculty and staff group. The university continues to support multiple affinity clubs and organizations for faculty, staff, and students. Nevada State College and UNLV. NSC is slated to open their multicultural center in August 2023 to expand DEI programs and resources. The center will be called the Multicultural Collective. NSC and UNLV collaborated to establish recommendations for the implementation of the anti-bias and anti-discrimination training policy issued by NSC. These recommendations have been presented to the Chancellor and his cabinet and are currently under review. Marcela Rodriguez Campo and Nayeli Rico Lopez worked with the Idea Council and System Office to update NSC's DACA and undocumented resources website and institution statements, which had not been updated since 2017. This is a living webpage that will need to be updated as immigration policy and resources shift in our state. Nevada State College and UNLV were also able to host their annual UNDOCU grad celebration to honor undocumented graduates. NSC graduated 17 the Dream.US scholarship recipients this year and celebrated with over 50 attendees, including families, friends, faculty, and staff. President Pollard gave remarks and students received a gold honor stole for their achievement. The Dream.US scholarship has awarded their full ride scholarships for undocumented students at NSC and UNLV. Nevada State is welcoming 35 new scholars for the 2023-2024 school year, and UNLV is expecting 44. DRI. DRI's Idea Committee recently completed its second annual inclusion and belonging survey that is tied directly to its five-year strategic plan. The right page. This has enabled us to guide initiatives focused on positive organizational culture with an evidence-informed approach to foster inclusion and belonging. This was also the procedure for this was also presented at the Northern Nevada Diversity Summit that Angela mentioned. DRI held a Black History Month Science Trivia Lunch event in February and will be hosting the LGBTQIA+ educational training from TMCC in July. Additionally, on April 6th, DRI received its recovery-friendly workplace designation. I want to thank Regent Goodman for attending this event at our Las Vegas campus. This initiative was brought forward through DRI's Idea Committee and is an effort led by Foundation for Recovery in collaboration with the Nevada Department of Health and Human Services, the Division of Welfare and Support Services, and supported by Nevada's Executive Office. The purpose of this initiative is to promote individual wellness by creating a work environment that supports the mental and physical well-being of our employees, proactively works to prevent substance misuse, and celebrates recovery from addiction in the workplace and community. The RFW will challenge the stigma of addiction and mental health. It will help save lives and strengthen families. It's a free program available to all NSC campuses. With the current mental health crisis across the country, it is critical that we do everything we can to support our faculty, staff, and students. These are just a few of the highlights of the important work our diversity officers and their teams are doing on our campuses, and we appreciate the time that you gave us to present this. Finally, I want to thank my fellow Idea Council members for their unwavering support and hard work. I will be rotating out of the chair position on July 1, but Angela Holt from WNC will take over, and you are in excellent hands. Thank you.
Thank you for that. Any questions or comments? Acting Madam Chancellor.
Chair. Oh, sorry.
Go ahead, Regent Boylan.
Oh, thank you, ma'am. Appreciate that. To the young lady, I had a couple of questions, if you don't mind. I'm not on this committee, but I really like this information. Great presentation, ma'am. How many positions do we currently have in all this Idea Council? And you mentioned something for Latinx, et cetera, et cetera. And how many more are we planning to have in the near future? We talked about the budget and COLA, et cetera, at one of our last meetings and how short funds are. So I'm just curious, are we hiring all these people because it's politically the correct thing to do? And why do we have so many, and why can't the ones we have cover all the institutions? Just help me with that. I know you don't have the numbers up front, but when you do send them to me. I'm Boylan, the regent. All right. So send me any of that information, because I fear sometimes that the pendulum swings too far the other way and we want to prove that we are not racist or biased or anything, and we go too far and go, you know. So are all these positions really necessary? Ma'am? Ms. Trimble, right?
Yes, thank you, Regent Boylan.
Yeah.
So just a couple of clarifications you were asking about positions. So just to make sure you understand, the IDEA Council is composed of the diversity officers from each individual campus. And I know that's separate from what you're asking. Those groups, those individuals go back to their campuses and they have teams. They work with their campuses, with their students, with their faculty and staff to determine what the needs are. So each campus doesn't have the same number. It varies based on the needs and the, you know, we want to make sure we're representing all of our students.
Thank you. That's great. But if you, like I said, if you could get me the numbers, how many people work in this and why is it necessary that we have so many people doing this, that I'm really, really interested, not just curious. Because
Teacher,
I'm all in favor
me.
Of... yes, ma'am.
Regent Blunt, we'll put that in new business. About your request,
okay.
I'll just roll it over into new business as opposed, because it's kind of outside the agenda item.
No worries, ma'am. Thank you so much. But it was just questions. She said any questions, and that was my question. Thank you.
Thank you, sir.
Absolutely, and we're happy to share everything we're doing. We'd be happy to share with you.
Thank you.
And other questions?
Acting Chair, you had a comment or question?
I'm a chair again. Thank you, Madam Chair. For the record, Dale Urquiaga, I just wanted to add to one of the items in this agenda so that the attorney doesn't scold me. The IDEA Council report referenced the work that they've done at my request on the curriculum for our anti-bias, anti-discrimination training, which this committee recommended to the board and the board adopted as policy. And so I wish to thank them for that. I kind of gave them a homework assignment, and I might be their boss's boss's boss, but I'm not their boss, and they did it. So I'm appreciative of that. So what we will do is, and we will bring this back to you for your information purposes, we'll issue essentially a chancellor's memorandum, might come from the council, might come from the chancellor, that will inform how our institutions implement that curriculum. They had great suggestions for that. So as you will recall, the institutions each have to have their own plan for that training, again, in our decentralized system. But I appreciated the guidance. We were asked the question from the HRAC, like, tell us what you want us to cover in these courses. So we will do that. We'll issue guidance memorandum, and then the institutions will submit their plans. And then there are two items, which I will bring to you, Madam Chair, for a future agenda dealing. You will love one of them. It's about metrics over the training. And the other deals with where one goes after one takes this training, and there's something that isn't a Title IX or isn't an EEO. And so I just appreciate them thinking of the directive from the board through policy holistically. I asked them to think about standards because I'm a K-12 guy, and they came back with a really broad curriculum plan and also the things that we left out, where would one go if there are not resources, and how will we know if we did any good? So I just wanted to thank this group. They put up with me a lot, and they've done really nice work. And so both those things will cycle back to you.
Thank you, Acting Grand Poobah.
Since I
can I just follow up on that too?
Yes, please.
The other
Go
part
ahead.
Of this was determining what training mechanism we were going to be using for this, and Vector Solutions is something that we already all have access to. We can customize it as needed, but they already provide a tremendous amount of content and are working really well with us to try and get to where we want to be. So it's not something we have to go purchase something new, and it's available, and everybody in NSHE has access to it. So I appreciate your support, Chancellor Urquiaga, and we're excited to be contributing to this. I think it's important.
Thank you again for all the hard work you all do. You're closer to the solution. You're closer to the problem, so you're closer to the solutions, and I appreciate that. And with that, scalability. We already have the program, we're not spending any additional money. It seems like it's going to be scalable.
Yes, it's scalable to each institution, and they can customize it and put their their branding on it. They can roll it out. There's also reports that come straight out of it. We don't have to create some brand new workday report. It can all be done easily.
That's wonderful. Thank you. Thank you so much. Any other questions, comments from anyone in attendance?
Chair Perkins.
Oh. Regent Arizcata.
Just the charge of the Hold on. I apologize. The charge of the committee, the charge of the council, in which we're referring to right now, let me go back to that, is for other regents, is Title 4, Chapter 8, Section 6. Just so if anybody needs to look at that for other regents, they need to look at it. It's right there in our handbook. Thank you.
Oh, thank you for that answer. And with that, thank you, Ms. Trimble. Now we're up to new business. Is there any new business?
Dr. Regent Cruz Crawford, for the record.
Go ahead, Regent Cruz Crawford.
Awesome. Thank you. I'll take my spot since I'm on the committee. Just kidding. I did have a few things. The first thing that I wanted to say is I got to attend a lot of graduation commencement ceremonies this week. Beautiful. We are having some of the most diverse classes, both with experience, background, race. And my favorite thing is just looking at the families before and after the ceremonies. And if I wasn't able to make it, I apologize. I also have my own commencement ceremonies at school. My daughter is graduating as well. So I did attend CSN's Latinx graduation ceremony, and that was beautiful, made of first generation college students, and their stories were inspiring. I did want to thank Dana Trimble for the report, and she did bring up that AHI, the American Association of Hispanics in Higher Education, was hosted at CSN this year. I got to attend, and it was a great conference. So for new business, I would like to suggest that we, as a board, our members get purchased membership for AHI, which is American Association of Hispanics in Higher Education. You don't need to be Hispanic to be a part of it, but since we do have heavily serving Hispanic institutions, the membership includes professional development, newsletters, conferences that help support students that, you know, traditionally have not gone to college with people in their family or speak languages other than English at home, Hispanic languages. And it's really just, it just seems like an act of due diligence for all of us to be a part of this. So I'd like to suggest that for new business. Thank you.
Thank you. I so noted. Any other new business? Regent Boylan?
Thank you, Madam Chair. And thank you, Regent Crawford, for putting me in my place. No, I'm not on this committee. And since the chair suggested that what I had was new business, I will ask that question here. And I'm sure I'll be told that this is actually a regent request. It happens quite often. So is there a way that the regents, the board, could get a presentation or an accounting of all these positions that come under the IDEA Council? I have to get that right, committee and council. And all these positions that the young lady Trimble was talking about, how do we justify all these positions, like I said? Or is it just political correctness that we are all, you know, really afraid of these days? So is there a way? This is new business, so whoever takes care of this. I'd love a presentation by the IDEA Council. And I also like to thank the Regent Vice Chair Ariscada. What was the last thing you said? Title 4, Chapter 8? I didn't get the last bit.
I found on Chapter 4, excuse me, Title 4, Chapter 8, Section 6.
Section 6. Thank you, sir. You are a learned man. And I appreciate that. Thank you for that information. Thank you, Madam Chair. I appreciate that. And I hope this comes up in new business somehow and it's taken care of. Thank you.
It will probably be mentioned on some future agenda. So thank you for that. Any other New business. Okay. And with that, I believe we are adjourned. Thank you all. Oh, sorry, sorry. Okay, no, we're not adjourned. Take that back. any public comment in ELCO?
There is no public comment in ELCO.
Thank you. Any public comment in Las Vegas?
None in Las Vegas.
Thank you so much. Any public comment in Reno? Awesome. Now we are adjourned. Thank you so much, everybody.